Good morning. We're at the Pasuk HaBeis Chav Gimel, where Bathsheba was fooled by Adoniyahu to request Avishag as a wife for Adoniyahu. This was Adoniyahu's strategy to try to lay the groundwork to make another run at the throne. And Shlomo HaMelech sees through it. And he makes a shvua that this is it for Adoniyahu. So we mentioned that reading the psukim, so to speak, literally, it would appear that there were two shvuas, and that seems unnecessary. The Malbim seems to say, doesn't quite spell out beferish, but the way he explains the psukim, it seems to me that he's really learning it as one shvua, pasuk chavbeis and chavgimel, and the... Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, and that when he says Kibin Nafsho Dibra Adoniyahu Sadabra Hazeh, it's part of the explanation. It's not a statement that he's going to die, and then a second statement that he's going to die today, but rather he's saying Kibin Nafsho, since he risked his life to make this request, that proves to me that he deserves to die. Just to marry Avishag, he wouldn't have risked his life. And therefore, it's clear to me that it was an attempt at the throne, and I swear, therefore, that he will die today. So this is the gist of the Malbim's explanation. So I mentioned at the end of last week's shir that I had a question on this, which is how is Shlomo making such an emphatic statement that he risked his life? He ben nafsho dibar Adoniyahu Sadabra Hazeh. If Bathsheba was fooled, yeah, it's at least possible that Adoniyahu was also fooled. Maybe Adoniyahu didn't realize that it was such a serious request. Just as Bathsheba didn't realize it was such a serious request. Now, true, Bathsheba only was fooled because somebody fooled her, but it's possible to fool yourself too. And I think perhaps the answer is that the way in which Adoniyahu approached it demonstrated that he knew what he was doing. Because if Adoniyahu was really so innocent and thought there was nothing, it was a harmless, simple request, he would have gone straight to Shlomo. The reason he didn't go straight to Shlomo and he went through Bathsheba is because he knew he could fool Bathsheba much easier than fooling Shlomo, and Bathsheba may be able to fool Shlomo because he wouldn't be on guard. So the fact that Adoniyahu took this circuitous route was the evidence that he knew how risky his request was, and yet he did it anyway. So, keep an afsho, Dibra Adoniyahu Sadavazah. Pasuk of Dalid, here we get the death sentence of Adoniyahu. And Shlomo presents it in a kind of interesting way. He says as follows, Va'atoh now, Chai Hashem, I swear by the life of Hashem, Asher Hechinani, who has prepared me, Vayoshivani al Kisei David Avi, has placed me on the throne of David my father, Asher Asili Bayis has made for me a house. Mefarshim say house refers to the throne. We had this, by the way, in this past week's Parsha. We find a reference to the Mialados, Shifra and Pua, which we know were Yocheved and Miriam, and they were instructed by Paro to kill the boys, and not only did they not kill the boys, but they provided them sustenance at risk to their lives. And then they came and made some excuse, right? Paro confronted them. So the pasuk says, "Vayitav lahem elokim Hashem," rewarded them. "Vayas lahem batim," and he made for them batim. Says Rashi, "What are batim?" Batim refers to Kahuna and Leviah that came from Yocheved, and Malachim, kings that came from Miriam. So we find that expression in the Chumash, bias referring to kingship. So he's saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu prepared me, he sat me on the throne of David, he made me this bias, this position of kingdom, Kasher Dibra, as he had promised, Ki Ayom Yumas Adonai, so today Adoniyahu will die. And the obvious question is, what is this whole speech? The Hashem has put me on the throne, and he prepared me, and he put me on the throne of David, he made me a bias, Hashem has prepared everything, so Adoniyahu will die. Why does he have to give? Why not just say, "Listen, Adoniyahu is a rebel; he'll die." What's all this stuff about the Kadosh Baruch Hu giving me the throne? The Mefarshim explain that Shlomo was saying that I have a special achrayus; I have a special responsibility to make sure that Adoniyahu is put to death, because of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed me on the throne of David. He secured the throne. He made for me a bias. He promised me menucha. He promised me a strong kingdom. It's my achrayus to preserve the gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a person a bracha, it's a responsibility. And you have to take care of it. And Shlomo was motivating himself by saying, look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for me. How could I just be careless and negligent and put it at risk? I have a responsibility. Interestingly, one would think there are a number of reasons why Shlomo would like to have a secure throne. Not the least of which is personal safety. Right? He wants to have a throne to be secure, to be safe. It's good for Kali Yisrael, it's good for him, it's good for everything. That's nice. But beyond that, look at the gift HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me. I have a responsibility. That sense of responsibility can be a higher form of motivation for a person who's holding the right madrega in life than the personal considerations and even the cloud considerations. Even the fact that having a secure throne is good for Kali Yisrael, which is a motivation. That's nice. I'm sure there were also motivations, but when he's making the shvuah, the ultimate motivation to Shlomo HaMelech is I have a responsibility to preserve the gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me. This is really the explanation of a well-known chazal, Tzadikim chavivim aleim amonam yosem igufa. Tzadikim, their money is more beloved to them than their guf. And of course this is said in reference to Yaakov Avinu. When Yaakov Avinu was coming back from the house of Lavan and approaching Esav, famous story, so they crossed over the river, and Yaakov Avinu went back for a couple of jars, pachim kitanim, and that's when he had the confrontation with Sarah Shalesa, with the Malach of Esav. So why did he go back for a couple of jars? Yaakov was a rich man at that time. And that's the explanation. Tzadikim chavivim aleim mamonim yosem igufam. It came through honesty. It was a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have a responsibility. How do we know that that's what it means, besides the fact that it's really hard to believe it any other way? You know, they're greedy, they're stingy, the money is so important. Look at Yaakov Avinu, same Yaakov Avinu. A number of years later, he took all the money that he had earned in the house of Lavan, including these pachim ketanim, but as well as millions and millions more, every last bit of it, and he all gave it to Esav to purchase Esav's share in the Maris HaMachpelah, in the hopes that they wouldn't have tainus, that he wouldn't have any problems with Esav. For the Maris, it didn't really work. As we know the story later, Esav still made trouble, and they had to go and try to get the documents, you know, on the sale. In the meantime, Chushim ben Dan took care of it in a more expeditious fashion. But sometimes the legal system moves a little too slowly. But the fact of the matter is, Yaakov Avinu was so concerned about Pachim Kedanim, and he's ready to throw it all away to buy the share of the Maris HaMachpelah, which, by the way, Al-Pi'ikar then was his anyway, because he was the Bechori, bought the Bechori, but he knew that Esav wasn't going to accept that. So that means if Yaakov's Das Torah, Yaakov's judgment tells him that it's time to spend $5 million for a little share, a piece of land in the cave there for a burial plot, no problem. Why? Because the Chaviv and Aleim Mamonim is not a personal thing. It's a responsibility I have. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me money, I have to use that money the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to use that money, and not to waste it. So it's a sense of achrayus. If Hashem gives me a gift, I have a responsibility. And if the proper way to use it is to try to avoid machlokas and get the Maris HaMachpelah, that's fine. I have no problem. I'll give it all away. It was vast sums of money. So that is an attitude in life. How far it goes can be brought out by a thought that the Rosh Yeshiva said on about Bagan and Sephornu. Same parsha, not quite the same incident, but after confronting Esav, and things worked out a lot better than anticipated, and Esav is being friendly. So Esav makes the generous offer that I'll accompany you back. After all, you know, it's dangerous on the road. I have my 400 men with me. I'll give you protection. Accompany you back. The last thing that Yaakov Avinu wants is Esav's company. Right? He doesn't know how long Esav is going to be so friendly. He doesn't need Esav hanging around. So he's got to tell that to Esav. But he can't just tell Esav, get lost, I don't want you here. So he has to have a reason. So the reason he said is, I tell you that, you know, yuladim rakim, that the children are young, v'atzon v'abakar alos alai, and the sheep and cattle are upon me. And utfakum yom echaz v'meisu kol atzon. If I push him one day, I go too fast, all the sheep will die. And Rashi there says, he isn't really referring to the sheep, he's referring to the children. If I go, it's hard for them to travel. You travel at a much faster pace, and if I push them to go at your pace, they will die. So therefore, I can't accept your offer. Sefarnu says, "Ki alai mutol davar hayuladim." It is upon me; it's my responsibility to take care of the children. The lashon of the Rabbag is alai hanhagasam. It's my job to lead them. The implication is that what he said to Esav is, I have a responsibility here. I have a responsibility to the children, and if I push them too hard because I don't want to hold you back, I don't want to slow you down, they may die. And that would be a violation of my responsibility. What about the fact that I love my children and I don't want them to die? That's not what he said. He said, I have children, I don't want them to die. I have to explain, you know what? Alos alai, it's my responsibility. Apparently, Esav would understand for sure that he loves his children, but Esav would even understand even more the idea of responsibility. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me a gift. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me children. He gave me sheep and cattle. I've got to take care of it. I have a responsibility. Yes, I love them. That takes me to a certain point. But the sense of achrayus, when a person is an ish emes, as Rav Shiva explained, the idea of achrayus comes from the mid of emes. You have to know what's truth, what's honesty. And what a responsibility is, a commitment. Commitment means honesty. That's more important than the personal feelings of love. It's more important that even Esav wasn't such a tzaddik, but he was a chacham. And they say, you know, the Velt says, Esav's head ended up in the Maris HaMachpelah, because his head was pretty good. It was the rest of him that was the problem. But to understand this concept, achrayus, responsibility, Hashem gave me a gift. If push comes to shove, and chas v'shalom, nobody would ever want to be in such a circumstance. But if push comes to shove, and the mid of emes, the mid of achrayus dictates that you have to harm your children, then an ish emes will do that. If your child is a criminal, right, ben sorer amore, you're supposed to bring the child to Bezdin. You bring the child to Bezdin, he may be killed. But that's what your achrayus dictates. So achrayus is supposed to supersede the personal feelings. MS goes beyond that, and the person who's holding that madrega actually feels that way. So Yaakovinu felt that the achrayus of his children was a more important issue than the personal love that he had for him. And not only that, Esav understood that. Esav maybe didn't live his life that way, but he knew the truth, and it was a good argument to be made. Because Esav understood that this sense of achrayus, the sense of responsibility, goes even beyond the natural feelings that a person would have to save his children. By the way, just derech agav, on this Rabag and Sefarnu, the Rosh Yeshiva point out another interesting thought. The Rabag in particular explains that what was Yaakov's dilemma? If you're afraid that if you push them too fast, the children will die, so don't go too fast. Continue at the same pace that you've been traveling until now. So Rabag says that's not Musar. Since you know that Esav goes faster and that you're slowing him down, it's your obligation to speed up. Miderech HaMusar, that's what he says. Clearly, it's not your obligation to speed up to the point that you endanger the children. So what is your obligation? Your obligation is to figure out the exact right balance. If you're traveling yourself, you take it slow and you make sure everything is safe and secure. But if you're traveling with somebody else and you're slowing him down, then you have to go as fast as you possibly can. And he sort of gave the mashal. Suppose you have a situation where you have a person who might be sick on Shabbos. And you have to decide whether or not to be mechallel Shabbos. So you can't just say, listen, let's play it safe, we'll be mechallel Shabbos. Because then you're being mezalzel on Shabbos. But you can't say, let's play it safe and it won't be Mechal Shabbos. What about Pikuach Nefesh? So you've got to figure out the right balance. So you're in a dilemma. I have the life and the safety of my children. Okay, it's very important. But Musar is also very important. You're slowing this person down. I have to strike a balance. Now listen to the Musar. Why is it Musar? Now we would understand that if you ask somebody to go with you to help you out, and because of him you're inconveniencing that guy, so you have to do your best to make that inconvenience as minimal as possible. But that's not what happened here. Yaakov never asked Esav to go with him. Esav volunteered. So somebody is volunteering to help you, and you know that it inconveniences you. Not only that, Esav said, I'll slow down. It's not only he said, I'll help you, and he didn't realize that it's going to slow him down, or it's going to cause, I know exactly what I'm getting myself into. I know I'm going to have to slow down, and I don't mind. I'm happy to do it. Even so, even though you said you volunteered to do it and you said it's okay with you, but the fact is I'm slowing you down. And if I could avoid that, I have to avoid it. And Musa dictates that I need to, as much as I can, avoid inconvenience you, even when you're the one who voluntarily did it and assumed the role on yourself. And so much so that I have to make these calculations and balance it and do the utmost that I can to avoid your inconvenience without endangering my children. And Yaakov said, I'm afraid I might make a mistake. I might go over the line. Because you have to go all the way up to the edge. Not over the edge, but up to the edge. And it puts myself in a dilemma. So you see from here, not only do you see what it means, a sense of responsibility, but you see from here what it means musar, what it means inconveniencing another person. And a person who's willing to do you a favor, okay, but you have, from your part, have to do whatever you can to minimize the inconvenience and the tircha and the difficulty on the other person, even though that other person voluntarily assumed that role.
Well, what was actually
Asaph's intention? We don't really know, but one would assume so. But even if it wasn't, you have to play the game as if it was. Whatever Yaakov said was addressing a person who is allegedly sincere. He has to give a reasonable argument.
Say anything.
Well, there's a machlokas in Chazal when Esav kissed Yaakov, whether it was sincere or not. I imagine the same machlokas could follow through in the aftermath. Those who say it was sincere, presumably this was also sincere. Those who say it wasn't, maybe this also wasn't. But in any case, it wouldn't affect the discussion between Yaakov and Esav, because Yaakov has to present an argument to Esav which would be a valid argument, assuming that Esav is sincere, because he can't tell Esav, I don't think you're sincere. So whatever Yaakov said to Esav is valid, even if assuming that Esav was sincere, even if the truth is that it was all a show.
But also Yaakov's whole argument was exactly what Esav was volunteering to do. It wasn't a winning argument.
It was a winning argument. Esav accepted it because Esav also understood what Musar is. Esav understood.
He
was volunteering. But even though I'm volunteering, even though Esav is volunteering, Yaakov has to speed up. And Esav, you're right. I can't tell you, even no matter how much I tell you not to speed up, you still have to speed up. Because that's their acharet. And I understand the problem. If you speed up, you might speed up too much and endanger your children and you have an acharias. To lead your children properly. So it was a valid and understandable argument, and two insights can be derived from it. Number one, the extent to which Musar is mechayev a person to act, even in a circumstance where one would think the other person sort of was mocha, but voluntarily was mocha, still I have to take his inconvenience into consideration. And secondly, that the primary motivator that Yaakov was citing was a lie, was the responsibility and not the personal feelings of love or the personal interest he had in preserving his own wealth. There is a very serious and significant halachic shaila on this pasuk, as well as many other pasukim, but since we're doing this pasuk, it's a good enough place to bring it up. There is a beferish halacha. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that a person is not allowed to mention his father by name. You're not allowed to call your father or your Rebbe by his name. Didn't keep it of aim. It says klar in Shulchan Aruch that this halacha applies, and it's based on a Gemara, even after the father has passed away. Look what Shlomo did. Chai Hashem Asher Hechinani Vayoshiveni Al Kisei David Avi. He mentioned his father by name. How can that be? Why is David mentioning his father by name? If you know your psukim, you will find other instances and other circumstances where the same question could be asked, and there's a couple of different halachas here that hopefully will answer most, hopefully all of the psukim. The Ramah says that although you are not allowed to mention your father's name, that's if you mention it simply as a name. If he would have said Al-Kisei David, it would have been a problem. But if you connect it with the expression Avi, my father David, or my Rebbe so-and-so, that's okay. And this could be a riot to that halacha, because he says Kisei David Avi. The same thing, by the way, you'll have, for example, Hamalach HaGol Osi, right? V'karev Hem Shemi V'shem Avosai Avraham V'Yitzchak. He doesn't say Shemi V'shem Avraham V'Yitzchak. That would have been a lack of Kivud Avayim. But to say Avosai is permissible. By the way, this question comes up l'halacha more frequently than you would think, and I'm going to tell you a heter, so you may have already been relying on this. Somebody asks you your name for an aliyah, so you say Chaim Ben Yankel. You just said your father's name. So are you allowed to do that? So there are some shittas that say that when you say Ben, it's the same thing as saying Avi. And just as you're allowed to say Avi David, you're allowed to say Shlomo Ben David. There are others who say that's not so pashut. However, the Piskei Tshuva does paskin that in response to somebody else's question, you're allowed to do it. So if somebody asks you, what's your name for an aliyah, you're allowed to answer Shlomo Ben David. It may be... That's if somebody says it in response to a question. What happens if it's not in response to a question? For example, suppose you're the gabbai and you're calling up your brother for an aliyah. So what do you say? My brother, you call up Yamod Adoniyahu, right? Let's say Shlomo is the gabbai calling up Adoniyahu for an aliyah before he kills him. So he says, it's final aliyah, you know. So he says, Yamod Adoniyahu. You can't say Ben David because, I mean, maybe you can. It's totally in the machlokas. But according to the shittas that you can't, it's not in response to the question. So you should say, Adoniyahu Ben Avi Mori. Or at the very least, Ben Avi David. But you can't just say the name. Right, or sometimes Ashkenazim do also if the father's not alive.
Oh, right.
So the answer to that, I think, is that Mi'ikra din, that's okay because you're not really referring to your father. If you meet somebody else in the street who has the same name as your father, you're allowed to call him by the name. There seems to be a Midas Chasidus not to do that. They say that's how Abaya got his name. Abaya was raised as an orphan, and I think his name, if my memory serves correctly, it was Nachman. And the person who raised him, his father's name was Nachman, so he used to call him Abaya, like father-o. Like today they do sometimes, you know, in Yiddish you have these types of expressions. Mamala, you know, that type of thing. So that's how he got the name Abaya, according to Rashi. So there is a Midas Chasidus not to do it, but Mi'ikra din, that would be permitted.
Could he ask himself a question and then answer it? Who should I call?
I don't think so. In certain things you say Marimim, you could play tricks, but I don't know if that applies over here. So the issue, that's a response. Now, although this answer, Avi David, explains many psukim, it doesn't explain all the psukim. For example, a little bit later in this parak, we find Shlomo Melech saying, Ule David, Ule Zaru, Ule Veso, Ule Kiso, Yeah Shalom. And it doesn't say Avi David. So there, the Mefarshim say the Chida, and others say that was Derech Tefillah. When it comes to Tefillah, then you don't say, you don't have to say, or we'll see exactly some of the parameters, you don't say Avi David. Why? Because who are you speaking to? You're speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. when you're speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the titles that you give human beings, in a way, is a little bit of a chutzpah. For example, we know that Uriah HaChiti, who was a captain in David's army, was considered a Moed B'Malchus, because when David told him to go home, he said, Adoni Yoav, my master Yoav is in the field. You don't say my master Yoav to David, who is the master of Yoav. It's a chutzpah. So you can't say Rebbe Umori when you're speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avimori, who's your master? Kadosh Baruch Hu is his master. So therefore, when it's in tefillah, you don't say it. It would actually appear from the chidah that you're not allowed to say it. The later poskim say that just to say the simple expression Avi or even Rebbe is permissible if you want to. Rebbe Mori or Avi Mori or Rabbeinu Adonenu Marenu Rabbeinu, which are titles of kavod, are not permissible. But the title Avi or Rebbe can be read two ways. On the one hand, it could be a title of kavod, and that's why the Rama said you're allowed to say Avi David. But it could also just be a fact, a description. Which David am I talking about? The one who is my father, not somebody else named David. Which David am I talking about? The one who happens to be my Rebbe. So if you just use the single word Avi or Rebbe, according to the Pasuk, it's permissible. Not necessary, but permissible. But to say Avi Mori or Rebbe Mori when you're in a tefillah is not allowed. Because that's, in a sense, an affront to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it comes out, let's get back to our Gabbai. So this Gabbai is calling up his brother for an aliyah. So he has to call Adoniyahu Ben, at the very least, Avi David or Avi Mori, whatever he wants to say. Now Adoniyahu is making a Mishaberach. Alright, in this case David's already dead, but if David was alive and he's making a Mishaberach and including in the Mishaberach he wants to include his father, so then you should not say Avi Mori. You're allowed to say Avi if you want, but you cannot say Avi Mori in the Mishaberach, because the Mishaberach is a tefillah, and when it's a tefillah you should just say the father's name. Okay. Sometimes, you know, the other Gabbai is going to take him twice as long to say the Mishaberach. Now, you're used to it. You could go right through it. This guy's going to have to stumble over the words, so it might be a reason to do it yourself. So it comes out, just to sort of summarize the halachas that we've touched on, is that it is permissible to say your father's name with a title, such as Avi, preferably Avi Yomori, but even Avi alone, the same thing with a Rebbe. But without identifying with that title, then you're not allowed to say the name. That's Bechayev or Acher Chayev. When it's in a tefillah, on the contrary, one should not give a title. There's a heter to just say identifying feature, Avi or Rebbe, but you're not to say a title. For example, if Adam Gadol is sick and we're making Mishaberach, we're saying Tillim, you should not say Moreinu V'Rabbeinu in the Mishaberach, or in the tefillah. By the way, there's an interesting extension of this chidah brought down the Minchas Chinuch. He quotes a pasuk in Chumash. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Elazar haKohen, Zos Chukas haTorah Asher Tziva Hashem es Moshe." So Elazar is saying, Elazar was a Talmud of Moshe. And he's saying, Zos Chukas HaTorah Asher Tziva Hashem es Moshe. He doesn't say Moshe Rabbeinu, or Adonenu Moshe, or Adoni Moshe. He says Moshe. And this is not a tefillah. He's saying over halacha. So the Minchas Chinuch says this is really an extension of the concept of tefillah. When you're mispallel to Hashem, you don't say a title, because it's a little bit of a chutzpah to call somebody Adonenu Moreinu vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the real Adon, the real Mora. So how could you compare your father, your Rebbe, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself? If you are referring to a dialogue between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe, it's in the same sentence. So you say, Asher Tziva Hashem es Moshe. How can you say Adonenu Moshe when you're just talking about Hashem? The sentence includes both. Hashem spoke to Moshe. So you're talking about Hashem speaking to Moshe. You can't call him Adoni Moshe. So therefore, in that context also, although it's not a tefillah, but it has the same characteristic as the tefillah does, since you're putting Moshe's name in juxtaposition, in contrast, or to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you can't give him a title. Again, you find out many applications of this. One that comes to mind is Yehoshua speaking to Moshe after the incident of Eldad and Medad. He says, Adoni Moshe Kiloim. He was held to task for this for a different reason, because he was telling Moshe what to do. But how did he say Moshe's name? Same idea. He didn't say Moshe Kiloim. He said Adoni Moshe. And David Avi, Shem Avosai. When you have the title, then it's permissible. Okay. Pasuk Chaf Hei. Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo B'yad B'nayahu Ben Yehoyada. So Moshe, I'm sorry, the Melech Shlomo sent in the hands of B'nayahu Ben Yehoyada, who will, of course, is already assuming the position of Shlomo's right-hand man. Vayifka Bo Vayamos. And he met up with him and he died. He killed Adoniyahu. With Adoniyahu. He went after Adoniyahu and he died. Meaning Adoniyahu died. Now there is a problem here. Problem is that Benayahu ben Yehoyada was a Kohen. And a Kohen is not allowed to be Metame Lemes. So how did he kill Adoniyahu? And in essence, the Rishonim give two answers. Radak brings both of them. One answer is that he was careful to kill him in such a way that he did not become Tameh. How did he do that? He stabbed him and then withdrew while Yoav was still alive, and then he let Yoav die. So Yoav didn't die instantly, and by the time he was dead, Adoniyahu had let go. Obviously, we would have to assume this was in an open space where there was no problem of Tumas Ohel, or either that, or they got out of the room even before Yoav died. Second explanation is that since it was a mitzvah, once the king commanded him to do it, I'm sorry, Adoniyahu, he killed Yoav too, but I'm jumping the gun. But right now we're still talking about Adoniyahu. So the other explanation is that since it was the king's command, it was a mitzvah, and the b'maka mitzvah, he was allowed to do it. I don't want to get too bogged down in the intricacies of it, but this is a, in the sugya of Asei Dochalos Asei, this is a very complex issue. Keep it of aim. Mitzvahs that sort of are voluntary in the sense that had he not commanded him, it wouldn't have necessarily been his mitzvah. But once he is commanded, becomes his mitzvah, are you allowed to do it, not allowed to do it? But apparently many Rishonim learned that you are, and that would be a mitzvah. What kind of mitzvah are you allowed to be metameh? The other answer is he did it in a way that he avoided the Issur Tum. By the way, B'nayahu had another role. He was the Sar Tzva. He was the head general of Shlomo's army. And that also raises the problems, because a general in war is often faced with a circumstance that you have to become Tameh. And again, you have to say the same answers, that he was a general, but he wasn't going to become Tameh. You know, a general could lead the army and not actually himself touch the dead bodies. It puts restrictions on him, but it could be done, or else, B'makom mitzvah, he was commanded by the king to be the general, and therefore it would be permitted. But it really raises another question. The question is, okay, once Shlomo commands B'nayahu to do it, so either it becomes a mitzvah and B'nayahu is allowed to do it, or even if he's not allowed to do it, he has to find ways and means to accomplish the king's command without it. But why would Shlomo put him in such a position? Why not find somebody else? I assume there was no shortage of servants to Shlomo. So get somebody who's not a Kohen, and let him do the job. Now, when it comes to appointing the Sar Tzva, it's more understandable. Because if B'nayahu was the most capable person, then, you know, being a general is not an easy task. We find at one point that David HaMelech wanted to get rid of Yoav and remove him from the generalship, and he got a replacement, and it didn't work out so well. So, and lives are at stake. Now, in fact, there were no wars in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, but you can't know that in advance. He was promised that the throne would be secure, but he didn't know to what extent. That meant that he wouldn't even have to fight. We don't know. So you don't appoint the general on the assumption that he's not going to be used. So when it comes to that responsibility, if Shlomo's judgment was that there is nobody as qualified as Vinyahu to be the general, it's understandable that he had to appoint him as general even though he's a Kohen. But when it comes to killing Adoniyahu, Lechora, other people could have been capable of doing that too. Right? And if not one, send a posse, you know, send a troop of soldiers. What's the big deal? So I think that the pshat may be, and we had some references before in the Mefarshim, that there were certain kavanas that went into this. We know from many Maimari Chazal that it's not only what you do, but it's what you're thinking when you do it. It has to be l'shem shemayim. In fact, I'm reminded of an incident, and I know that this is actually a subject of debate. There's a debate amongst the Balei Musar about the nature of Esav. I should preface this by telling you, I know our Rosh Yeshiva has said in the name of Rav David that Esav was an out-and-out Russia. But there are those who argue that Esav was only a Russia contextually. As a person growing up in the house of Yitzhak and Rivka, having all that hashpah and influence, to do what Esav did is really rishus. But if another person, if you or I would have done the same thing, people would have thought that you're a tzaddik. And his behavior was not so bad, but Lefi what was expected in such a household, it was terrible. But in an absolute objective standard, he wasn't so bad. And one of the proponents of this view, as it turns out, was Amir Chadash, the Chevron Mashkiach. So we asked him, that it says in Chazal, he did 5 Averis in one day. One of the Averis is Harig Nefesh. How can you tell me he's a Harig Nefesh and he wasn't such a bad guy? So Amir Chadash said, you know who he killed? He killed Nimrod. How did he kill him? So the Gemara says that he used to hunt, and Nimrod had this ridiculous tax. Anybody who hunted had to pay an exorbitant tax to Nimrod. Esav didn't want to pay. So Nimrod said, either you pay or you die. So Esav came to Yaakov and says, what am I going to do about Nimrod? So, since I can't fight him, and he's too strong for me. This is Esav, who was no weakling. So Yaakov said, Nimrod is a Balgaiva. Nimrod has in his possessions the big day chamudos, the begadim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made for Adam and Rishon. They have a unique characteristic that when you are wearing those begadim, nobody could kill you. So you should tell Nimrod that I'd be happy to fight you. I could beat you with one hand tied behind my back. It's the begadim that I'm afraid of. Nimrod is a Balgaiva, and he'll take off the begadim to fight you one-on-one. You go and grab them and put them on, then you could beat him. And that's what Esav did. He challenged Nimrod. Nimrod took off the begadim. Esav grabbed them, and that's why Esav had the big day chamudos. How did he get a hold of them? It's mentioned later. He got them from Nimrod, and based on that, he taka defeated Nimrod and killed him. So said Rameir Chadash, How could Yaakov give Esav this Eitzah if it's murder? I'm telling you how to murder somebody. He should have told Esav, I don't know, you better pay up. Why did he do that? Obviously it wasn't murder to kill Nimrod. Maybe it was a mitzvah to kill Nimrod. Why is Esav called a murderer? Because when he killed Nimrod, he enjoyed it too much. It was the attitude. It was the feelings. So that type of issue is at play over here. Sure, Adoniyahu needs to be killed. I want the person who's killing Adoniyahu to have the right kavana, l'shem shemayim, not because I'm angry at him, not because I enjoy it, chas v'shalom, not because I'm jealous, not because of any other motive, but rather to secure the throne that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised me, l'shem shemayim, for the sake of my achrayas, for the sake of Kal Yisrael. I need somebody who I could be confident is going to do it the right kavanas, because if it's done with the wrong kavanah, it could be a taina on us. And Benayahu was the only person that he trusted. Benayahu was the most qualified. Benayahu was such a tzaddik, ben ishchai, as the pasuk says, he was a tzaddik, and therefore Shlomo trusted Benayahu to be able to do it properly, and he couldn't risk delegating this task to other soldiers, other servants, who may not in the end have done the deed. They may have done the deed, but they wouldn't have done it l'shem shemayim to the extent and to the proper kavanas the way that Benayahu would do it. So therefore Shlomo had to ask Benayahu to do it, and once Benayahu was asked to do it, he either had to find a way to circumvent the laws of Tumah and be able to kill the guy anyway, or he was able to kill him because of the Sibui HaMelech.